Justice Walker. May it please the court. This is de novo review appeal of a case that's the first case under a recently enacted city ordinance, city contract agreement for the regulation of civil service protections for police officers in the city of Fort Worth. Prior to the enactment of this ordinance, the city of Fort Worth's police department is regulated by Chapter 143 of the Local Government Code. The Local Government Code in Subchapter I provided for collective bargaining, the type the city of Fort Worth agreed to do with the Fort Worth Police Officer Association. In short, they've created a hybrid system that blends certain parts of the old Chapter 143 with the new meet and confer agreement. For example, discipline matters are still covered under 143, but most other items are covered under the new meet and confer agreement.
I have a question. Under the agreement, it looks like that party or parties is defined in the agreement only to mean the City of Fort Worth and the Police Officers Association, yet here we're seeking to bind an individual police officer.
Well, that's because of the nature of the agreement. The Police Officers Association presented itself to the City of Fort Worth with over 700 signatures of police officers saying that it wanted to represent the police officers under 143I as the collective bargaining unit. Consequently, they represent each police officer, whether all the police officers voted for it, if they only did a majority. So yes, that's what this case is all about, that one individual has said, I'm breaking with the Article 8 of the agreement that sets up dispute resolutions between the parties, which are the association and the city. Indeed, if you look, there are other areas. The preamble talks about it's only between the city and the association. Police officers are negatively excluded out of the definition because they are defined as someone that is a member of the association under the definition of member. They're members of the bargaining unit, not parties. And they're defined as officers as someone sworn under the laws of the state of Texas to be a police officer. We seek three things by this appeal. And I guess you find it a little strange that we would have been successful in having the temporary injunction denied. But we allege to plead the jurisdiction on two bases, standing and failure to exhaust that remedy under Article 8. We think this court should reverse Judge Curry on the plea of the jurisdiction denial. You should render an opinion that tells Justice Curry that based upon the record in this case, that the plea of the jurisdiction should have been granted and that he should dismiss this case. And the opinion should go to our Article 8 argument that interpretation, application of enforcement of the alleged violations of a specific provision of the agreement are determined by Article 8, not by a district court. And the reason that's important is because this is the first time we've had this issue come up, even though the agreement is new. It was enacted November of 08.
Are there other cities that have enacted agreements similar to this one that Fort Worth has enacted, the meet and confer?
Mm-hmm. Not that I know of, Your Honor. There are other cities that are under 143 that would fit in the jurisdictional limit to go to meet and confer if they put it on the ballot and the citizens voted for it as they did in Fort Worth.
But is it proper to grant the plea to the jurisdiction if the argument were only that the grievance procedures had not been exhausted? It seems to me you're not saying that the trial court isn't going to have jurisdiction. It's just that it's not right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had two arguments, as I understood it.
Well, that's only because of the nature of what happened. Let me go over the timeline. Maybe I can answer it that way. They filed the letter. Officer David Sager filed the letter to the Police Officer Association, as you're required to do under the first step of Article 8. He filed that, and then 8 days later filed a petition in the district court. And in that connection, he now has started the process, so he's brought up the ripeness issue because he hasn't exhausted it.
Right.
The court doesn't have jurisdiction to hear it when he files it because he's not a party. So we're making two arguments. The first one is jurisdiction. Court will never have jurisdiction under one of these cases. As a matter of fact, the only time the court really has jurisdiction is if the arbitrator is more than abuse of his discretion. He has to commit fraud or make a clear and manifest error of law. That is written into Article 8. So this process is set up for the association to represent all the officers. They file a letter with the association. It has 30 days to make a decision, a determination on whether to go to the next level and bring something to the city's attention. What happened here, Judge Curry, or they moved so quickly with their injunction, the 30 days had not expired. Indeed, Judge Curry took a couple of days after he granted the temporary injunction from the bench, or denied the temporary injunction from the bench. I said, we've got our plea out there. He says, I'll get to that later. 2 days later, he renders a written decision denying the plea. The 30 days is still not run on the association responding to David Saber's complaint. After Judge Curry rules, the association does not find merit in the complaint to take it forward.
Well, do you agree that if he had filed his suit after the 30-day period, the court would have jurisdiction?
No, because he's not a party to the agreement, and those are the only people that can go to through the arbitration process. If someone has a dispute with an interpretation or application of the meet and confer agreement, it's either going to be the city or it's going to be the association.
So his due process remedy is what? If the association does not find merit in his assertion?
Under the rules, he's had his due process.
Okay, he's done.
He's done.
Is membership in the union mandatory for each police officer?
No, it's not. It's each police officer, however, is represented by the association as the representative of all police officers.
So membership or wanting to be in or wanting to be out has nothing to do with it. The association is representing the interests of the officers, and any of this grievance procedure and eventually end up maybe in district court, whatnot, is the association and the association only.
Yes.
And if the association does not wish to pursue a grievance that an officer brings to it, it's dead in the water.
Yes.
Well, I noticed that Section 8 appears to carve out matters involving the interpretation, application, enforcement, or alleged violation of a specific provision of the agreement, correct?
That's right.
And so that can be suit for interpretation of that can be brought in district court, but you're saying only the association can bring such a suit.
And that would be because after you, I don't think you'd ever get there. You would have binding arbitration before that, because that's the last step. If you look at the four-step procedure in Article 8, it ends in binding arbitration after going through the steps where it goes from the association receiving a letter. And one of two things happens. They either agree with the officer or they don't. In this case, they didn't. If they did agree, then they will deliver in writing to the chief or his designee, the chief of police, the dispute, whatever that dispute is. And he has 30 days in which to respond. And if it's not resolved at that step, then it's taken to the civil service director, who has a certain number of days to get it to the city manager, who looks at it. If there's no agreement or resolution at that point, then they can go to arbitration. And that's binding arbitration, which is provided for under subchapter I.
Does chapter 143 or section 143 provide any guidance as to the content of these meet and confer agreements, or is that just totally wide open? In other words, could there be a meet and confer that says basically anything that the police officer, that the city decides is final? I mean,
well,
do we have any guidance concerning the required content of a meet and confer agreement, any statutory guidance?
No. It allows for that agreement to control. Section 143.307 says that the agreement of this subchapter supersedes a previous statute concerning wages, salaries, rates of pay, hours of work, or other terms of condition in employment to the extent of any conflict with the statute.
So just so I have this clear, if Officer Gorski is 55 years old and is continuously passed over for promotion, and younger, less qualified people that do less on the exam are always promoted over him, and he brings this age discrimination problem to the association and they choose not to act on it, he has no recourse.
He can go outside of that under 143. That's not in the agreement. That's not covered by the agreement.
What is it that's not covered by the agreement?
His right, say he was discriminated under another statute.
Okay.
I'm
following you.
We're talking about issues under
right.
this statute.
I got it.
Or under the agreement. Okay.
In this case, was the officer a member, voluntary member of the association?
It's not in the record, and I don't know. I think you've hit on the crux of the matter that we brought to. We alleged two things in our plea to jurisdiction. One, they didn't have standing, which is jurisdictional, and he hadn't exhausted his rights under Article 8. However, if the timing had been different, they still lose on the first issue. He still loses on the first issue. That is, if Judge Curry had said, you know, I'm going to abate this until the association rules. And he does. And the association rules as it did. He still would have lacked jurisdiction to move forward on the case because David Saver is not a party to the agreement. And the appellate process, the dispute resolution process in Article 8 covers exactly what he was complaining about, which is Section 4 of Article 15 on how points are awarded on an exam. Now, I'll try to make this simple because it was confusing when I first learned about it. An officer takes a promotional examination. We'll call it 100 points. He can make 100. In addition to that, he gets certain add-on points after his final score is determined on how he did on the test. And one of those is how much seniority he has in the level below as a sergeant and how many points he gets for either an associate degree, bachelor's degree, or master's degree.
He gets bonus points.
Bonus points, okay. Now, because we changed from 143 to 143I with this agreement, the operative date was November 11, 2008, and there was disagreement on whether that date should apply because of the way you would calculate those bonus points. So that's right at the heart of the agreement. It's an interpretation of, well, which section do you apply, Section 3 of Article 15 or Section 4 of Article 15? So it has nothing to do with any rights outside of the agreement. You may look like your rights are being affected. There might be outside of the agreement, but you're inside the agreement at that point. And as a consequence, we say the judge does not have jurisdiction to hear that. The person that would hear it eventually would be the arbitrator if it went that far. And that's what this case is about. And we think Judge Curry missed it on that. Are there any other questions? I'll give you some time back.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Good morning, judges. My name is Wes Cooper. Mr. Gorski, I think, touched on a very important point when he said that really this stems from a hybrid of these two agreements, Section 143 of the government code and this meet and confer agreement that the city entered into. And that is where the confusion begins, as he just summed up the end of his argument, is when this promotion date, the schedule took place. And that is the root of our cause. To touch on his arguments, his first argument of standing, if you look, and I believe, Judge Walker, you asked, you know, the question of, well, it says in the agreement the parties are the city and the Police Officers Association. There is, in Article 19, Section 1, a mention of officer. I know that officer is defined in the agreement, just as Mr. Gorski said, but a reading of that section, it's contemplated by the drafters of this agreement, whomever that was, that officers at some point may be involved in defending their rights. They put that word in there for a reason. The second thing I'd like to talk to you about.
You said in 19.1?
Yes, sir. Article 19, Section 1.
That it mentions the word officer or?
It does mention the word officer.
A failure of the city or officer to insist?
Yes, sir. That's it. And if,
is that talking about an officer of the city or an officer of a police officer?
I believe it's talking about a police officer as it's defined in the introductory section of the agreement.
Okay.
Now,
and so you're throwing what import on that?
Just that it's there. That it was contemplated at some point by the drafters of this agreement that police officers would be involved. If they weren't involved, they would have just said the city. But they included police officers specifically in this section. It's really that simple. But it ties to the reason that Mr. David Saver has standing to bring this suit is simply this. Under this meet and confer agreement, as Mr. Gorski said, basically, in essence, these things are a pretty good idea. You've got 700-something police officers, I think, in the city of Fort Worth, and they needed a way to manage the police officers' complaints. So they entered into this meet and confer agreement to handle that. It sounds efficient. It sounds effective. And in essence, it is most of the time. However, the problem arises, as it did in this case today, when the panel that sits to hear the police officers' grievance doesn't adequately represent the police officers' interests. And that's what had happened in this case.
What is the difference between that and the panel not just happening to agree with the officer?
I'm sorry, happening to agree with the officer and let us pursue our grievance?
Okay. Well, tell me about the panel.
The panel is made up of the Police Officers Association. So, in essence, they sit to judge if they messed up.
I know, but what I'm saying is if they don't happen to agree with the officer, then the officer's position, then you could say, well, they weren't adequately representing the officer.
That is true.
So, I mean, okay, the panel didn't agree with the officer's position.
Right.
So does that mean that they're not adequately representing the officer, which I think is what you just said?
It doesn't. It's not a necessarily mean that they're. Certainly, there are going to be instances where the officer is represented adequately, and the panel does disagree.
Right.
However, I don't think that is in our case.
What distinguishes this case from those cases?
In our case, they weren't adequately represented at the hearing. For one, no questions were allowed to be asked. No record was allowed to be made. To say that he was represented before this panel would quite honestly be a large, large stretch. There simply wasn't any adequate representation. And if the POA is sitting in judgment of themselves, chances are they're never going to find themselves to be wrong. And as this is new, again, this has never happened before in the city of Fort Worth, but it has happened in other jurisdictions. There are some cities that do have these agreements. One is in Houston. The Williams case that's cited in our brief, I'm not sure if it's in Mr. Gorski's or not, this this scenario presented itself under a different set of circumstances, but they found that the officers, or those were firefighters, were adequately represented, and that was a breach of contract where some firefighters had been fired. But it was the same kind of agreement. I don't know if it was actually called a meet and confer, as ours is, but a reading of that case is the agreement is very, very analogous to the one we're discussing today.
So you're saying the trial court found, a trial court found that the firefighter was not adequately represented?
They found that there was, that the firefighters did not have jurisdiction, or the court didn't have jurisdiction to hear the firefighter's claim because of the meet and confer agreement. But that was brought under a different set of circumstances, under a breach of contract theory, which honestly I agree with the court in that situation, but we're not pursuing a breach of contract claim, which I would believe would limit us.
So segue us from the officer did not agree with the panel's decision, and therefore his position is he wasn't adequately represented, to I have standing.
Well, you've touched on the crux of our argument, which is we're kind of darned if we do and darned if we don't. The fact of the matter is, as we stand here today, we have to assume that the trial court found all facts necessary for them to have for it to have jurisdiction. The only way that the trial court can do that is by hearing testimony and believing that Officer David Saver was not adequately represented. By virtue of us being here today, obviously the trial court found those
facts. And how does that
confer
standing? Let's assume what you just said is true. Everything you just said is true. How does the trial court believing that he wasn't adequately represented confer standing on him in the face of the wording of this agreement that is between the city and the association who will represent the officers?
That this issue has been looked at by courts before, including the Fifth Circuit, and they've said when a court finds that an officer or a firefighter, anyone that's a member of a meet and confer agreement or agreements like that, finds that that individual was not represented fairly and adequately, then that officer has to be allowed to pursue a remedy for himself outside of that agreement through the district courts or through the court system. And the reason being is if you don't allow that, it puts us on a very, very slippery slope, I believe, that we don't know where it stops. As Mr. Gorski and you, Justice McCoy, discussed about the Age Discrimination Act, if the city decided they didn't want to hire any more brown-haired cops without and they went to the POA, and the POA denied their grievance, although the brown-haired police officers brought that up, they would be remediless, which obviously will not stand. And allowing each one of these to be blanketed under this, well, you're under the meet confer, you don't get to have, you know, that's the end of your remedies, puts us on a slope where there is no stopping without a court finding, as Judge Curry did, that he does have jurisdiction to hear this complaint.
I don't think I have a complete copy of the agreement in my appendix, and I'm just wondering exactly what sorts of matters it covers.
The agreement is somewhat wide open, and I don't have a copy in front of me either, but I don't think it enumerates specific provisions. I do think that the proper channel for Officer David Saver was to go to the grievance panel, as he did, for this specific grievance. But I don't have a complete list, Judge.
By going to the panel with his application, was there a waiver on his part of any future rights in the district court?
No, sir. None. Certainly, Mr. Gorski will disagree, and I don't believe there was an affirmative waiver of any kind. Obviously, the city's argument is that these are the only rights that you're given is under this meet and confer. But I do not believe there was a waiver.
Well, your position is he couldn't get standing until he attempted to go through the procedure and wasn't afforded any meaningful representation.
That is correct. He has to, I believe that he has to try to do this by the meet and confer agreement. He is, and Mr. Gorski didn't know, David Saver is a party to the meet and confer agreement. He is. He signed on to it. But he's got to show that he was inadequately represented. He's got to exhaust his administrative remedies, which he did. I know that was touched on. The plea to the jurisdiction before the hearing, Officer David Saver had immediately begun that administrative process. And the law, again, is clear. It's spelled out in the brief several times, that basically you don't have to stand in front of the train if you know it's coming.
What standard do we look at when we're trying to decide if he was adequately represented? I mean, I can see, you know, this isn't normally a black and white situation. This is shades of gray. I mean, he had a lawyer, or he had a paralegal, or he was afforded 10 questions, or he was given 15 minutes, or, I mean, there's all this rainbow of possibilities that one could examine as to whether he was adequately represented or not. What standard do we look at? What prism do we look at in trying to make that decision?
Judge, I think that what this court needs to look at is what the trial court decided. And the trial court has already decided he wasn't adequately represented. They had to decide that in order for them to dismiss the plea to the jurisdiction. The trial court's already made that decision.
Why could he not have based it on the fact that it wasn't right? And he believed that there was standing, but that it wasn't right.
By the time that we got to the hearing for the plea to the jurisdiction, the claim was right. He had, in fact, been denied his grievance by the POA. And again, the imminent harm that Mr. David said, he knew that he wasn't going to get these bonus points like he was told that he was going to be getting for his exam.
So the answer to my first question was abuse of discretion by the trial court as opposed to a de novo review of what the trial court looked at? What's your position
in,
on
that? In essence, yes. That would be correct.
Okay.
The only way to get to know, for us to know, if this was or wasn't a fair and adequate representation of Officer Davisaver is evidence that would be given in a trial court, which obviously has not happened yet. That's why I said earlier, we're kind of darned if we do and darned if we don't. We can't get there yet.
Did you just say that evidence wasn't presented in the trial court as to whether he was adequately represented? And if you did say that, what did you show to Curry to show that he wasn't?
There was evidence presented at – there was a hearing on the TRO and temporary injunction.
Right.
And there was a discussion on the record about the process of the grievance panel hearing the complaint, the and what eventually turned out to be a dismissal. At that time, there hadn't been a dismissal yet. There were written motions submitted to Judge Curry, their plea to the jurisdiction, our reply. And then, as Mr. Gorski said, he made a very quick ruling based on that without a hearing. So the evidence, if any, would have been contained in our motions, which without a great deal
so
of testimony.
Your position is we look at everything that Curry looked at to determine whether or not there was standing and then use the abuse of discretion standard to judge what he did?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We'll ask Mr. Gorski in a minute if he agrees.
Isn't standing always a question of law?
Standing is a question of law unless there are merits of the case that require examination to determine that. And that's exactly what we're dealing with.
So you're saying there's disputed issues of fact underlying the standing ruling?
Yes. If the trial court were to determine that everything at the hearing, that the grievance panel was on the up and up, he was represented fairly, he got everything he was entitled to, and there is no jurisdiction, I think that's it for us. But that's not what they determined. The trial court said, sounds like he probably wasn't fairly adequately represented. There are some factual issues, really, that have to be determined for us to decide this and dismiss the plea of the jurisdiction correctly.
Whose burden was it? Your burden? Your burden to show that he was not adequately represented as a matter of law in order to have standing?
Yes, sir. But not, yes. Any further questions?
I'm having trouble on. There's a fact question, but you're trying to establish as a matter of law there was no standing.
That there is standing.
What if there was a fact question about whether he was adequately represented or not? If it's your burden, you lose because you have to prove he was not adequately represented?
I think that there was a fact question to that to that matter, and it has been proven that he was not adequately represented.
All right, we'll let.
Thank you,
Mr. Gorski. Dive into this pool of jello.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
See what he does.
There's a statute, 143. There's an agreement, the meet and confer agreement. There's a plea to the jurisdiction. The only facts that I can be up here on are jurisdictional facts, and they can't be in dispute, and they're not. Article 8 says if you have a grievance, you file it with the Police Officers Association, and it goes from there. We look at the rules of statutory construction for 143. We look for the agreement, the rules of contract construction. And the question is a matter of law. There are no fact issues. Unless you want to delve into whether he was adequately represented in some other forum, which was not in this case. Indeed, read their petition, their amended petition. They never talk about inadequate representation. And they're right. There's a Fifth Circuit case on it because we cited it in our brief. And here's what it says is the standard that you're looking for on how you determine if someone's inadequately represented. Because he talks about slippery slopes, but I got to talk about how it really works. You guys need something to kick this case out on all cases, because if you don't, you get all these cases where everybody says, I'm over here and I'm going down the slippery slope. Will he stop me? Here's the standard in the Fifth Circuit. The rules are not, however, without exception. It is established that if the union has breached its duty of fair representation by arbitrarily refusing to pursue a claim through the grievance process or by doing so in a perfunctory or otherwise inadequate manner, an aggrieved employee is not foreclosed by the results of the grievance process. They've got to come up with a pretty high burden to get through that grievance process and show that they were inadequately represented. He may sue his employer or his union or both, but in order to recover, he must prove that the union breached its duty of fair representation and that the employer breached the collective bargaining agreement. I would submit if there's a good faith dispute on how the agreement reads, you can't meet that burden. And that's all this issue was. But that's really irrelevant to what we're talking about when we're saying there was no jurisdiction. There is a case out of Houston, the Williams case, and they are under a meet and confer agreement, and they are 143 city. And they had the issue of this argument he makes about the officer being considered in Article 19. That's the only place it's considered. Under the rules of statutory construction and contract construction, you've got to read that whole agreement and see if that officer used in one place is harmonized and makes sense with the rest of the agreement. If it doesn't, you've got to go with what the agreement's aimed at and what it says as a whole. In the Houston case, they had the word officer. They tried to do that, to use that word. And the case and the court said the agreement refers to either party and the other party. The mention only of the parties of the agreement and not the firefighters in both agreements, and the statute suggests both contemplate suits only by the parties. And that's our argument. The definition of parties is the city and the Police Officers Association. Now, the only way you can get around that is to bring up specters that, well, the system's not working correctly. This is the first case. They submitted their letter, and their letter had, if I have it handy, an interesting, this is Defendant's Exhibit 8 in the record. At the end of the letter, complaining about how points were going to be awarded in addition as bonus points, they say, this correspondence shall serve to preserve applicable notification deadlines under and pursuant to the Texas Local Government Code, the City of Fort Worth Civil Service Rules and Regulations, and the Meet and Confer Agreement negotiated between the City of Fort Worth and the Fort Worth Police Officer Association. Next, providing notice under the Meet and Confer Agreement does not bind the undersigned to the terms. Doesn't work that way. They're bound because they are a member of the bargaining unit and they're represented by the Police Officer Association. And we have a majority rule. A majority of the police officers voted to have the association represent them. If you voted against that, you know, you got to do like Iowa. You got to become so popular, even though you're a small state, you can influence a presidential election. In this case, you can't do that.
So you're saying saying there are no officers that are not covered by the meet and confer agreement?
Not for what's in the meet and confer agreement. All these other issues like discrimination or how about being a whistleblower, they're covered under a state or federal statute on that. Only with respect to the interpretation, application of this meet and confer agreement. Thank you for your time and patience.
Thank you, Mr. Gorski. Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Thank you for your arguments here today. They've been very helpful. Your case is submitted. The court will take a brief recess for a panel change, and then we will call the third case.